Ben and I are married, and I'm in Evanston, Illinois, outside Chicago, with both my children. Lucy, 5, is playing in my jewelry box. In it are two wedding rings, a heavy, wide, gold one from my brief marriage to Matt's father, Lucy knows of him, and a thin raised gold band from my marriage to Jack, Lucy's father and Matt's adoptive father. I am wearing the third from my marriage to Ben, a rounded antique gold band. Lucy says, "I'm going to be like you and have 3 husbands when I grow up." "Oh," I say, "no, Lucy, it's better to have just one if you can be happy." A big day, Lucy to kindergarten, and Matt just turned 14 to his freshman year of high school. Up at 7 a.m. and an order to follow, breakfast, showers, getting dressed and gone, or tardy bells. Ben and I walked Lucy to school after driving Matt to his. A perfect first day of school day, cool and crisp and sunny, the children flocking like little birds to the school, teachers carrying signs with their names on them, parents milling and anxious, proud, one woman blowing a cloud of blue cigarette smoke upward into the sunny air of the playground. Lucy's straight-backed and expectant, holding her pink Care Bear bag with gym shoes, lunch, Crayola markers, and milk money inside it. I feel tearful. A child runs crying after his mother, who turns to hug him one last time. My 40th birthday. I heard a pretty young mother say to her little girl at the bus stop today, "I couldn't wait to get home to see you." And I realized that I never heard that when I was a child from my mother or from anyone until Ben. That it is this giant hole I've had in me, not even knowing it. There doesn't seem to be a lot of me left to put into my diary. I'm in graduate school for social work, and that and the children in the house take up 95% of my time. Today, when I don't have classes or field work, I wash dishes, take Ben to work, call the pediatrician's office, pick up medicine for my skin at the pharmacy, go to the bank and office store, take Lucy to a friend's, and then I'm free for an hour to study. Then I get Lucy, get Ben, Matt comes home, we make dinner, we do dishes, watch the Cosby Show, there's a bath for Lucy, I read to her, Matt goes out, Matt comes in, the phone rings and rings, more studying for me. Days of going, going, going. I itch for more time and peace. Whatever, I itch on my abdomen. And the ongoing custody dispute, the crumbling foundation of our old house that needs to be fixed, a report due at fieldwork, the money to be collected for a going-away gift, the social work conference plans and hotel reservation, the phone calls, the unwritten letters, the wedding gift long overdue. There's the birthday and the bike lock, the book to be picked up at the library, the ice skating audition schedule, the after-school plans. There's the Sunday night dinner, the cat box, the haircut appointment, school clothes, the purse that's too small, the window washers coming, the check for the Special Olympics. I want to keep writing, but I wonder when I can. If I rise early this fall, I can at least write my diary, which I've already neglected. Such a beautiful morning, Ben filling the apricot-colored wooden bowl with limes, peaches, nectarines, apples, bananas. "Look at this! Take a picture of this, will you?" he said exuberantly. We wake this morning to 2 fragrant little girls in their nightgowns playing in Lucy's room, her friend has spent the night, and 2 heavily sleeping adolescent boys, Matt and a friend, on the TV room pull-out couch. Brownie crumbs from a late-night cooking spree by the boys trail from the pan through the kitchen to the TV room and up the stairs. Matt took a shower after midnight, his 3rd of the day, and woke Ben. I dreamt I had to have an operation and wasn't sure there would be anesthesia. Maybe it's because Ben and I have taken the children to their father's in New Hampshire that I find myself full of old, gloomy memories, thinking a lot about the years past, of my youth that's gone, and the overwhelming number of negative memories I have of it, of my young body. It is the very young and optimistic face of a waitress in this lakeside town we're passing through, which brings those thoughts to me. But I should know that youth does not guarantee contentment rarely contentment. At the best, brief happinesses, or perhaps it is the optimism of seeing one's whole life out in front of one, shining. I had lost that feeling by the time I was 21 and married for the first time, maybe even before then. My youth was, in truth, most unhappy. So it is someone else's youth I long for. A happy day with Lucy. No deadlines, a rushing from one place to another. We had lunch and bought her clothes and looked at round dining tables together. I would really like to have one for Thanksgiving. The hairdresser cutting her bangs told her, "When I have a little girl, I want her to look just like you." Lucy's friend Susan here today. In the pocket of her coat, a penciled note saying, "Don't ever give her to her father or his wife." On the way home from school, Lucy and Susan are holding hands. We're talking about the classroom open house that night. I tell Lucy that Ben will stay with her, and I'll go. Lucy says, "Will Susan go?" I reply, "No, no children can go, but her mom can go if she wants." Lucy says, "Or her dad." Susan says, "I don't have a dad." Lucy, "Why not?" Susan, "'Cause." Lucy, softly, "Did your dad die?" Susan, "No, it was long, long ago, before I even remember." Then she whispers to Lucy and they giggle. Susan puts her hand over her mouth and says through her fingers, "He was stolen away by a wicked stepmother." Lucy, "She took him?" Susan, "Yep, and then she married him." Lucy, "Did he love her?" Susan, scornfully, "Nah." Lucy, "Why don't you live with your father and stepmother?" Susan, "'Cause she's bad." They run ahead of me down the sidewalk. Me to teenage Matt. "There are so many things you're just completely unaware of." Matt to me, "Like what?" Then he hears what he has said and we both laugh. Matt to me, "Well, that may be true, but there are so many things that you are unaware of." Me, "Like what?" Then I hear what I have said, and we laugh again. The children have left for New Hampshire for 4 weeks, and it is as though a loud noise has suddenly stopped. Our lives, the four of them, have been a race the past 9 months, running through each week, barely on top of two jobs, two schools, family life, to the weekends where we collapsed, panting until the next Monday. But now that's over. Summer has come. The children have departed for their fathers, leaving me their first and only mother, and Ben, who married the three of us, in this quiet. I waited for this moment, sometimes prayed for it. Yet now that it's here, I feel lost, sad, and suddenly unanchored. I go first when just back from the airport to Matt's bedroom, not only to see what he might have left on, the fan, a radio, four lights, but what he has left behind that will make me miss him already. The debris of his adolescence, which so irritates me in the midst of the school year, touches me in his absence, and I pick up his yearbook, a note in his handwriting, even his T-shirt, which I hold to my face. Lucy's room is more than I can face just yet. I simply close the door, for her room is still filled with what she calls stuffed-up animals, and the cord between us feels too short to stretch all the way to the East Coast. I hate two households as much, I think, as they do. I sat holding back tears in the airport terminal as the big plane pulled away, wishing it had been only in my power to provide them with one happy household, one sober father, and me, no summer absences. Lucy quiets in the last few days before departure and pets the cats incessantly. Matt, despite his age, still looks strained, looking level in the eye at me now from his taller stature. Their father, Jack, came out a month ago for Lucy's piano recital. Sitting at the recital in a row with these three male persons, my husband, my ex-husband, my son, I realized that the first two entered my body and the third exited it. No wonder I feel I must knit up the spaces among us, though it's impossible. Walking back to the car after the recital, I pulled out my camera to take a photograph. Farthest ahead was Jack, walking away with his back to me, already nearly out of the frame. Ben turned back toward me and my camera was waiting for me. Although impatience showed in his face and in the angle of his shoulders, He did wait for me, wondering what I'm doing. The children were walking together, between me and Ben, between their father and stepfather and me. They know that they, at least, belong together. And if they were to walk with a father, which would it be, and how would the other one feel? Now that I have a regular salary from my first social work job at a hospital mental health center, we've bought a little cottage in Ellison Bay, Wisconsin, a 4.5-hour drive from our home. My mother's grandfather grew up on a farm in Wisconsin, where he learned to make cheese, and later in Iowa had a cheese factory. So maybe some molecules of me remember Wisconsin, remember the farm. I'm half a Midwesterner, half a New Englander. This part of Wisconsin, the Door County Peninsula, is said to be a little like Cape Cod. Where is home? I miss New England. I miss New Hampshire. Where would I get buried when I don't know where home is? If it were now, I'd choose Iowa with my mother's side of the family. But she's buried in Massachusetts with my father, my cousin, by some mistake, buried between them, as though he were theirs. At a junk shop in Ellison Bay, I found a 1950 calendar, one of those calendars stores used to give away at Christmas. The sentimental illustration, called The End of a Perfect Day, shows a sunset beyond the fields of a farm, the farmer on his tractor being greeted by his wife in a white apron, by his daughter, a doll hanging from her hand, by his son opening the gate, and yes, even by a collie wagging its tail. I tacked it to the kitchen wall of the cottage so I can pretend such an intact, happy family in such a place exists. Idyllic farm days in 1950 Wisconsin. Never mind the other side of rural life, the black deeds, the suicidal wife, the crazy neighbor who kept a child in the attic. Even in the village where our cottage stands near the road, an old neighbor man, when his palsied wife complained that their dog shed hair all over their old one-story house, got up from his chair, not saying a word, and took the dog out the back door and shot it. That woman should have had a different husband and her children a different father. When my girlhood friend was visiting, it seemed at first that everything matches, her Chanel purse and makeup kit, her children and their father. She says she's gotten everything she ever wanted. Her worst moment, she says, was when her goldfish jumped out of the bowl and died on the floor. But she's joking. Or is she? She's always had a thicker skin than me. Now, when both of us are thickening in the same way at the waist, she wonders why she isn't satisfied. She thinks her small children are too secure and need some challenges. She says she tells them, "I'll give you to the gypsies if they misbehave." When I hear this, I'm no longer envious. Maybe two households aren't the worst thing that can happen. I'm feeling young alone with Ben this last weekend in Ellison Bay before the children return from their fathers. We're happy together. There is a time on the way up, a long drive, when I finally feel relaxed and take a big, deep breath, the cleansing breath, they used to call it in childbirth classes. This trip, I felt it shortly after I started to drive in Two Rivers. The road stretched out ahead of us. The air was cool, crisp, yet warm in the sun. The farms lay on both sides of the road. Beyond those on the east, there's the cerulean blue of the lake. I'm able to leave the cares and worries of my other life behind me. Once on the peninsula, the light by now is pink from the low sun, out of sight beyond the trees. The air is northern with a hint of chill. The fields and barns to the west become bathed in this soft pink light. A short drive then through a wooded area where tall trees make a canopy over the road. For the first time, we stopped at the Top Deck, a supper club on the North Bay. Just as they advertised, there was a sunset here too, on the opposite side of the peninsula, a pearly mauve and turquoise glow in the water. The one-man band played trumpet, organ, and banjo while beating his bass drum with one foot and his rigged-up snare drum with the other. We listened and gazed out at the bay, the long black pier, and two solitary ducks, also black, gently riding tiny waves. Big spiders spinning their webs all along the outside edge of the roof were silhouetted in black against the pearly glow. We danced. Ben's hands and body felt warm, familiar, and stirring at the same time. Then to this home, our cottage that once was a fishing shack, sledded long ago across Green Bay from the Upper Peninsula on deep winter ice and put down in this spot near the little village. We felt a lovely fatigue knowing we'd wake to birdsong and the rhythms of this place that once lived by fishing and lumber.